It's Lynn Rossetto Casper, and you're listening to The Splendid Table, the show for people who love to eat. Our program is produced by American Public Media. Well, today it's the noodles of Japan. I mean, really the first string. That's the foursome that's the heart of Japan's beloved noodle traditions. Chef Takashi Yagihashi tells us how to eat them by Japanese tradition or riff on our own. So how about a two-minute bread? How about a two-minute bread you make on the grill? How about a two-minute bread from India that's a great-tasting one-dish supper? Well, Indian cooking ace Raghavan Iyer tells us how to do it. Dad and commentator John Moe quits being the family short-order cook and lets his picky little eaters give it a shot. A brilliant move or courting disaster? And as always, in the second half of the show, we're going to be opening the lines for your calls. You can get to us at 800-537-5252. So let's roll with Jane and Michael Stern. They write the Road Food column in Gourmet Magazine. Hey, you two, where have you been recently?
Well, we have been in the land of Gitche Gumee by the shining Big Sea waters.
You've been in my neighborhood.
Yes.
That's right, near you.
And we were looking for you paddling a canoe down the lake, but we didn't see you.
Which lake? I mean, there were 10,000 lakes in Minnesota.
We were along the north shore of Lake Superior, and we were in Two Harbors, Minnesota, going to Betty's Pies, which, if you've traveled around there, you know about it. It's a kind of famous place.
It's an institution.
It is an institution. And to be honest, we weren't in love with some of the food on the menu. However, two things stood out. The pasties, which obviously, Lynn, you know what those are. They're like giant empanadas.
Cornish empanadas, yes.
Yeah, exactly. If a Brit did an empanada.
Exactly.
It's like beef stew in a wonderful pastry. And boy, is it
good. It was damn good pies. I mean, the pies were worth a schlep all the way up to that area that's in the middle of nowhere. I thought they were delicious.
Well, the pies, of course, are famous. And, you know, cream pies, fruit pies. But what Betty has fairly recently added, at least it was new to us in our most recent visit, is something called a pie shake. Now, this is a work of genius because what it is a milkshake, like a regular good old milkshake,
right,
into which they put an entire slice of pie before they blend it.
Wait a minute. You mean crust filling?
Crust and
crust
all.
Crust and everything. Everything but the plate.
Now, the waitress did tell us that you don't want to do this with a fruit pie because it will have too grainy a texture. On the other hand, we had ours made with a banana cream pie, and it was
just heaven. I could see where that could fly.
Yeah, it flew. I mean, the problem is, you know, you got to throw away the straw. A straw is useless because it's not pureed so much that, I mean, what's nice is you get little flakes and shards of crust as you either spoon into or gulp the milkshake.
This sounds fabulous.
I loved it. I'm always suspicious of places that are institutions, and you know what I mean, world famous. We were kind of expecting, you know, 5,000 tour buses and mediocre food, but in fact, we were very pleasantly surprised, especially this cinnamon meringue pie, which I thought was unique and interesting.
Yeah, that was good. And, you know, the other thing about Betty's is that even though it is an institution and it has since remodeled and is kind of modern, the waitress that we dealt with was a real good old cafe waitress. I remember we had to ask, is the turkey in the hot turkey sandwich
right
from a roasted bird, or is it from a compressed turkey loaf? And the waitress looked at us, hands on hip, and said, "Turkey loaf? That's just wrong."
I love it. I love it.
And she is right.
Hey, guys, thank you.
All right, bye.
Bye, Lynn.
Well, it's blackberry pie, blueberry pie, strawberry rhubarb and horseshoe fly, apple and cherry and banana cream, pumpkin and peach is a mighty sweet dream. Pie in the morning, midnight moon, lemon meringue, packs a bang, pucker my lip cause the key lime's tang. Pie a la mode, I'm about to explode, I can never get enough of that sweet, sweet pie.
Jane and Michael Stern are the authors of Two for the Road. Now, you know the Sterns are here every week, but you can get their food finds anytime. Just check them out on the website, splendidtable.org. I wish more people could get into anchovies. I mean, when people dislike these things, they hate them. It's unequivocal. But an anchovy can be like a firecracker. I mean, it lights up other flavors. It is absolutely loaded with umami. Now, they're dynamite with things like new greens, new potatoes, peas, lamb. And with one little can, you can lift the flavor count of about 10 recipes. For instance, the next time you do any kind of wine marinade, add one or two anchovy fillets. Now, you're not going to taste them in the final dish, but everything else is going to taste better. And by the way, you tame anchovies by using acid and a little bit of tasty fat. I make my own ranch dressing using just a little anchovy marinated with vinegar and garlic and onion, and then in goes some buttermilk, whole milk yogurt, and mayo, and lots of parsley. Try this with spring potatoes, you know, those thin-skinned ones. Mash them with butter and milk and, you know, salt and pepper, and then eat them with little bits of anchovy. Homemade bread sounds just great until temperatures get up there and you think about that hot kitchen. Well, think about the parts of the world with little fuel, hot climates, and cooks who don't have time to wait for the dough to rise. Places like India, where cookbook author Raghavan Iyer grew up. Now, Raghavan knows the cuisines of India the way Ken Griffey Jr. knows the outfield. To prove the point, his latest tome is called 660 Curries, the Gateway to Indian Cooking. Raghavan, it's good to have you back.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here, Lynn.
Raghavan, grilling season has arrived, and I'd like to talk about grilling Indian breads.
It's a perfect opportunity to do that. And when it comes to grilling breads, the first thing that comes to mind is the most popular breads called naan, which comes from the northwestern part of India. And to me, it's the most convenient, easy way to do it on an outdoor grill.
So how does this work?
Well, it's very simple. You fire up an outdoor grill. I prefer charcoal because you can build the heat up to a very high temperature. The goal is you're actually creating a facsimile of a tandoor, which is a clay-lined oven where the breads are traditionally baked. Mm-hmm. And so once the outdoor grill is getting hot, I actually also stick in a pizza stone. If you don't have a pizza stone, you could do unglazed tiles, which works beautifully well. And so the whole goal is to bring it to about a 600-degree Fahrenheit temperature.
Wow.
And then while that's happening, you can actually put together your dough very quickly. It's a very simple dough. It's just taking some flour, a little bit of salt, a baking powder, and I oftentimes will add a little bit of buttermilk or milk to that, or mm-hmm. yogurt, mm-hmm. to tenderize the dough, make it soft and pliable. And once you add the liquid, knead the dough, you want it almost to a point of being sticky, but not really sticky.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
the moisture is what's going to really make it tender on the inside and crispy on the underside. And so once you let your gluten rest a little bit, you're going to then roll it out into about a quarter inch thick. And I also like to take a little coarse rock salt or sea salt.
Right.
And then just dust that lightly on top of the rolled dough so that you get this sort of a slap of beautiful salt flavor that comes in there. And then you put it out on the grill on the pizza stone, and within 60 to 90 seconds, your bread is done.
What, do you cover your grill?
You cover the grill, and then that way, you're creating the tandoor environment.
Right.
And so the underside of the dough gets nice and crispy, and the top one starts to bubble, and you get these brown spots that come on the top. And then you lift the lid, and you've got this beautiful piece of naan that's staring at you saying, come eat me.
but I'm just thinking the magic you can do in front of your friends, 60 to 90 seconds, and they're going to be smelling that.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to just, charge.
And the beauty of it, too, is you could actually do a complete meal on the grill with the naans. Here's your basic dough. But all of a sudden, you can take adaptations. Take a little bit of shredded onions, maybe, or spring onions, which is a beautiful season for that. And again, I'm a big fan of chilies. You throw some chilies in. And
in the dough itself.
In the dough, you could do that. Or you could make a filling separately. And then once, if you make a filling, I often do potatoes also as an option. And you could put it in the center of the dough and gather the edges like you would make a dumpling, for instance.
Right.
And then you re-roll the bread out with the filling inside. And again, about a quarter to a half inch thick. And then that will take a little longer to cook on the grill, but still you're talking maybe 2 minutes. And you've got a wide array of flavors and textures. And you slather that with a little bit of clarified butter and you're in heaven.
You know, I'm thinking about you take that hot bread right off the griddle and you just tear it and wrap it around maybe a fresh chutney of onions and chilies and cilantro and just, you know, you've got crunch and hot all at once.
All at once. Because, you know, to us, breads are our eating utensils in India. And we eat with our fingers, we cook with our hands. Can I say that we believe that eating with silverware is like making love through an interpreter?
Raghavan, thank you.
Thanks so much for having me here, Lynn.
I have gained the ultimate knowledge.
Raghavan Iyer is author of 660 Curries, The Gateway to Indian Cooking. Now, you can find Raghavan's recipe for grilled flatbread studded with chili spiked onions. Boy, that sounds good. On the website, splendidtable.org. And while you're there, be sure to check out all of our other opportunities. Our weekly newsletter, Weeknight Kitchen, and by the way, don't miss the special Father's Day edition. Our podcasts, information on our book, How to Eat Supper, our Gastrosexual of the Month contest, and our latest brainchild, something we're calling Splendid Cheap Eats, a collection of inexpensive recipes culled from our archive. It's all there, splendidtable.org. Coming up, the Great Noodle Quartet of Japan, Short Order Parents, and Dinner Party Download. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. You're listening to The Splendid Table from American Public Media. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper, and this is The Splendid Table, the show about life's appetites. My theory is that noodles are the closest thing we have got to a food that all the world loves. Now, of course, that theory began when I was naive enough to think that it was all about Italy. Well, then I saw the movie Tempopo and went to my first Japanese noodle shop and the dawn broke. Maybe the Japanese had something here. Well, about the same time, Chef Takashi Yagihashi, who'd grown up in Japan loving noodles, was launching his career cooking in upscale French and Japanese restaurants. But that first love won out. He now has Takashi's Noodle Shop in Chicago and his new book, Takashi's Noodles. Takashi, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I am good. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me here.
Now, could you take us through the different kinds of Japanese noodles and how they're used? Like, for instance, what is a soba noodle?
Okay. Soba is the buckwheat flour used for most of the time. And just we're going to add to a little bit of flour, too, because the buckwheat has a very low gluten. And if you use the only the buckwheat flours, it's a little bit difficult to put together and make a noodle. So usually we add to it like a 20% of regular flour.
So it's buckwheat, which I know has a delicious flavor to it, very nut-like.
Yes, like earthy and nutty.
How is it used in Japan?
You know, most of the time, it's the lunchtime. It's a very popular dish. You can eat with a hot and with a broth, and you can chill down and eat with your dipping sauce. Mm-hmm. So you can go two ways.
All right. Now, the next noodle is the udon. Now, what's the difference between the udon and the soba?
Udon is the 100% of wheat flours, so no bakui.
Uh-huh.
Then most of the udon is very thick, like pretty much like a half inch thick, and it's much more, you know, bring your appetite, meaning is fill it up your stomach, because it's a very thick one. So.
Yeah, yeah.
And very popular in the west side of the Japan, like Osaka. You know, I'm from Tokyo, and when I was a child, I eat a lot of soba, bakui.
Right.
Then, you know, west side of Osaka, people eat the most of the time is the udon.
What's a somen noodle?
Somen is still wheat, but somen is made much more thinner. Looks like an angel hair pasta.
Uh-huh.
Then, you know, Japanese people eat a lot at the summertime because in Japan, the summertime is very hot and very humidity. So people want to eat something light. So that's why somen usually cook and chilled mm-hmm. and eat by with cold dipping sauce. So it's very refreshing.
All right. My last question about the different kinds. Is ramen a kind of noodle or is ramen a dish?
Yes. You know, everybody knows that when people go to the college, you know, it's very...
Yeah.
don't have a money so, and no time, so boiling in the water and wait 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But you can make serious food about this. You can make the stock and you can make from scratch.
What is the difference then between the ramen noodle and...
Ramen noodle is most of the time has a wheat and water. Sometimes we add egg. That's the ramen noodle. And you can choose sometimes without egg, with eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And with egg, it's much more richer and a little bit more smooth in texture.
So would you serve ramen noodles cold as well?
Yes, you can do that. And summertime, yes, we could make a broth with a little bit of chicken stock, soy sauce, and vinegar. And a little bit mustard. So that's bringing you more summer dishes and more refreshing, you know, chilled.
Sounds delicious. Do you always cook the noodles separate from the dish? Like, for instance, you would not cook the noodles in the broth. They would be cooked separately?
That's a very interesting question, and a lot of people ask me, too. And most of the time, I will say, yes, please cook the separate, because some noodle is very starchy, and you don't want to, you know, get that kind of starchy flavor to the broth.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And when you're doing a cold noodle, you cook it mm-hmm. ahead. Mm-hmm. How do you chill it and how do you keep it? Because I understand you can cook those noodles ahead.
Well, most of the time you should cook the noodle is the last minute. You're going to prep everything, garnish mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. the dipping sauce or broth or whatever you want to serve. Everything get ready. Then you're going to cook the noodle last minutes. Then you want to serve cold, you should put in ice bath and rinse it very well. That bring up your noodle to more great texture, like an Italian called al dente.
Oh, and that changes the texture. That's really interesting.
Uh-huh.
How about noodle etiquette? I mean, we're not familiar with Japanese etiquette, but what should we never do when we're eating noodles? Are there things that we could really be rude in doing?
Well, you know, it's a casual thing, so it's enjoy it. And, you know, most of the Western culture is not try to make any sounds when you're eating.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
you know, Japanese are totally opposite. We make a sound, slapping, like, you know, that's the sign of everybody enjoying the noodles.
Oh, Takashi, well, thank you very much for the education on many levels.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
Chef Takashi Yagihashi is author of Takashi's Noodles. Now, you can find his recipe for spicy oil with chilled ramen on the website, splendidtable.org.
parents have special opportunities. They hone incredible skills in doing their jobs with nearly no sleep. They become experts on creatures that look like sponges or fuzzballs. And if they are really lucky, they get to be short order cooks for each one of their kids who refuse to eat what anyone else is eating for dinner. Well, producer and dad John Moe has decided that enough is enough.
We have chicken.
Like the grilled chicken?
Yeah.
Do they eat that?
No.
And you made a soup for us?
Yep.
What kind of
soup? I made white bean soup with sausage.
Oh, that sounds
good. Chicken sausage.
I wish we could give it to the kids.
We can't. Because they won't eat it.
Charlie is 8. Kate is 6. At dinner time, my wife Jill and I often make a kid meal and a grown-up meal. We also have a 1-year-old, Margaret, but she's not picky yet.
You guys, what do you want for dinner? I can make you noodles.
Okay.
Friends tell us just make food and tell the kids they have to eat it. Mostly these are childless friends. Great idea, but so is world peace.
What do you want on the noodles?
Butter or nothing. Possibly spaghetti sauce.
I don't want to be a gastronomical bully. Why should the kids bend to the adult tastes? Now, we need universal food, the dinner equivalent of the Beatles. So we hatched an experiment to try to even things out. We parents would come up with a new dinner everyone can enjoy, then the kids would do the same. We went first. Keep in mind, 3 young kids, our lives are hectic, so we cheated.
We're in the freezer now, and
and we gave them hamburgers, okay? But what we actually gave them, they thought they were having hamburgers, but what we actually gave them were, let's see if I can find them. I've sort of hidden them so they don't know. Here. Classic burger flavor, veggie style. And they never knew.
Nutrition by deception.
It's the only thing that seems to work.
But were the kids fooled?
How did you like those cheeseburgers?
Good.
Great.
You'd eat it again, that burger?
Yes.
So now it was time for the kids to plan their meal.
What do you not like in a food?
I don't think I really like salad sauces.
Salad sauces?
Yeah. You know, like, dressings.
Oh, dressing, right. Okay.
I asked Kate what foods she doesn't normally eat but would be willing to try.
Tacos?
Mm-hmm.
I want to try them.
Would you like hard tacos or soft tacos?
Soft.
Why do you think it's so hard for us all to find foods that we can all eat together?
I don't know. I think we just have different hobbies of eating.
He's right. We do have different hobbies of eating. Jill and I enjoy spice. We like variety, food combinations. The kids like blandness, predictability, food not touching other food. The trick was to find something new but non-exotic.
Dumplings.
Okay, that's a start.
Maybe we could actually do kind of a cultural thing, like Chinese food. I mean, dumplings, Chinese chicken, and sticky rice are all Chinese. And I think they sound pretty good. I've had Chinese chicken, and boy, is it good.
When Charlie says Chinese chicken, I think he means sweet and sour chicken. We had that on New Year's, and he ate it. He's also been studying China in school.
Is there going to be a dessert, you guys?
What's that type of ice cream that has vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry?
Neapolitan?
Neapolitan with chocolate syrup. Served in a wine glass. And I tried it on top.
I looked up the simplest recipes I could find online. Chicken was easy. Dumplings, harder. Most dumplings are cooked in a broth with other foods, but that would be food mixing. We settled for German dumplings, spätzle they call it. So a Chinese-German meal with Neapolitan ice cream, served in wine glasses. I chopped the onions, which I assured the kids they wouldn't be able to taste.
So do we just cut into little squares?
They cut it into tiny, tiny pieces.
Oh yeah, like McDonald's has that.
Yeah, kind of like what McDonald's does. All right.
Now here we have the onion in the butter. Now we're cooking it. And while we're doing that, we're also cooking the rice. And it looks like we have 4 minutes left.
We were supposed to wad the dough for the dumplings into balls and then drop them into boiling water. We wadded, we dropped.
Okay.
They fell apart.
It actually does kind of look like amoebas.
Dumplings notwithstanding, Charlie was intoxicated. I left the room to find his sister and get her to join in, and I left the microphone on. I asked Charlie if he could find a microwave-safe casserole dish.
Can you remember that?
Complex. Microwave-safe casserole dish. Microwave-safe casserole dish. Microwave-safe casserole dish. Food jazz.
Finally, after an hour, we plated it up. Dumplings, Chinese chicken, rice, glasses of milk. We threw in some carrots for color. The meal the kids were convinced the whole family could enjoy, and they refused to eat the chicken.
Charlie, are you okay?
I don't want to find the dumplings.
Eat the dumplings or you're out of the family.
Are you kidding?
I'm half kidding. And, you know, it might be terrible.
It is.
American Public Media's John Moe and family can be found in their kitchen in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Dinner party, and you get, well, you know, the recipes, the table designs, the usual, but not the stuff that puts the party in dinner party. Now, for that, you need the off-center approach found on Dinner Party Download. Co-founder Brendan Newnham joins us. Brendan, welcome.
Thanks, Lynn. I'm happy to be here.
So, you know, I went to the site, Brendan, and the first thing I got was a joke about a hippie and a lifeguard, and it was one of those so bad it's good jokes. No, but I loved it. It was, what did the lifeguard say to the hippie that was drowning? You're too far out.
You're too far out, man.
Yeah, that was it. That was it.
We tried to resuscitate the joke in our show, but it turns out the joke is dead and beyond resuscitation, sadly. So we get a lot of bad jokes. You know, our show the inspiration is a dinner party, and it's shaped like a dinner party. And when I grew up, my mother was the daughter of immigrants, a social worker. My table was always filled with people. It was like Grand Central Station.
Uh-huh.
And at that table, I'd hear jokes and history and learn about food. And so we try to replicate that.
Now, what do you mean when you say it's shaped like a dinner party?
Well, it's a 15-minute show, but it has six segments. And each of those segments correspond to a portion of a traditional dinner party. So, for example, we start off with an icebreaker, which is a joke. And then we go into small talk, which are some kind of unconventional news bits from the week. And then we go into cocktails, which is we do a history lesson, something that happened this week in history.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to a bartender and we have them make a cocktail inspired by that history. So, for example, a few weeks ago or a month ago, Nabokov was the anniversary of the release of Lolita. And
uh-huh.
We had a bartender, told her the story, and she created this beautiful drink called the Lolita Haze with muddled plum and mint and, of course, young gin. And, you know, we have fun. We do cocktails like that.
Uh-huh.
And then from there, we go on to our guest of honor, which is our fantasy guest. We've had Robert Wagner, Irvine Welsh, a slew of people. And then from there, we go to the main course, which is the part of the show where we talk about food. And so it's a short 15-minute kind of booster shot to kind of get you inspired to talk at the weekend's dinner party.
So, I mean, I would imagine you've gotten a response. What kind of response have you gotten?
We've gotten some phenomenal responses. Some of the best stuff is from the listeners. I'm passionate about food. I kind of have a problem with cupcakes, and that's been a reoccurring motif. And and some of our listeners have gotten upset that I don't like cupcakes, and they've written in to defend the cupcake. And so that's spawned some fun stories as well.
Okay, so if we want to be ahead of the curve, what should we be doing now?
I have a feeling about lavender. I think lavender. We're going to see a lot more lavender in our food in the upcoming months. That's my gut feeling. I also think tarragon is also going to appear in our food in the future.
These are important movements.
Yeah. And, you know, along with the food trends, we also do a lot of music and cultural trends. And so we also have bands on that we think are eventually going to become popular. And so if you just listen to the show, it's like you know, going to the farmer's market and seeing what's on the table, and it'll mm-hmm. hopefully inspire mm-hmm. your own conversations.
Brendan, thank you.
Thanks so much, Lynn, for having me on.
Brendan Newnam and his co-producer Rico Galliano are creators of Dinner Party Download, heard on KPCC in Los Angeles. Now, for information, go to the website splendidtable.org. Okay, it is time for our weekly trivia challenge. Now, the question is, what is the dangerous cheese tradition of Brockworth, England? Well, we're going to be back in a moment with that answer, and we're going to be opening the lines for your calls. You can reach us at 800-537-5252. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. You're listening to The Splendid Table from American Public Media. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper, and this is The Splendid Table, the show for people who love to eat. Now, we're going to be opening the lines for your calls in a moment. You can reach us at 800-537-5252. But first, I've got the answer to this week's trivia challenge. Now, the question was, what is the dangerous cheese tradition of Brockworth, England? Well, it is the spring Cooper's Hill cheese rolling. Wacky comes to mind. Every year, a round of cheese is sent bouncing down Cooper's Hill as crowds cheer and competitors laugh as they tumble their way down to the ambulances at the bottom. Now, the danger comes in because the hill is almost perpendicular, and the whole idea is to race to catch the cheese. Well, there are several races. Nobody stays on their feet. In fact, winners generally use a cartwheel approach, and their prize is the 7-pound round of cheese. Now, look, I know the British have some pretty odd ideas around food, but purposely getting your cheese filthy as it bounces down a hill has to come from some angry soul who had just discovered that they were lactose intolerant. Oh, and by the way, I forgot to mention, even more insanity, the brutalized cheese is a double Gloucester handmade by the last artisan cheesemaker in the region. Now, we are talking about one of the most sought-after bits of animal protein in all of England. Those wacky Brits.
If you're feeling sad and lonely, there's a service I can render. Tell the one who loves you only, I can be so warm and tender. Call me, don't be afraid, you can call me. Maybe it's late, but you call me. Tell me and I'll be around. If it seems you're
The lines are officially open. You can reach us at 800-537-5252. Anything goes. Let's see. We have got Temperance calling from Farmersville, Texas. Temperance, what do you want to talk about?
Well, I have some dried lily flowers that a friend saw in the store and said she thought about me and sent them to me. And I have no idea what they taste like. I did a Google search and saw that they are in my favorite soup, hot and sour soup.
Right.
And also in some stir fry, which I don't fare so well with the stir fry. So I was looking for what they taste like and what I can do with them.
You're talking, now these are Chinese, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You are talking about dried tiger lily buds. Mm-hmm. And they're also called golden needles. But they have a slightly citrusy, rather floral quality. I mean, they are a flower. And the way you handle them, which you may remember when you make the hot and sour soup, is that you soak them in warm water about 20 minutes. And what a lot of people do, at the end of the flower, there's a little nub at the, you know, the long, narrow bud that's dried. And there's a little nub and then the stem. And some people cut that off. Some people don't. Some people leave the whole thing intact. Now, these tiger lily buds are rather delicate, so they're wonderful with things like little cubes of chicken and fresh ginger or just scallion and a little garlic, and you stir fry and you have the tiger lily buds with that. Or you have them with mushrooms, or you but white mushrooms, you know, not the yeah. very strong tasting ones. You have them with things like I'm thinking of green beans, that kind of thing. They'd be wonderful with cabbage. They tend to go more with winter dishes, just by the nature of the tradition, than summer ones. But think of them with very simple things. Stir-fried cabbage with fresh ginger, a little garlic, these tiger lily buds thrown in there, and maybe later on a little touch of soy sauce and white wine, and see what that gives you. So give it a shot. Okay.
That's what I was looking for, something to show them off and not lose them.
Yeah, just let him be the star. Hey, thank you. Take care. Call us, 800-537-5252. They're called tiger lily buds, and they're called golden needles, and they come dried. And if you keep them away from heat and air and light, they'll last you a year. Easy. You just soak them. 800-537-5252. Let's see, we've got Kimberly calling from Alexandria, Virginia. Kimberly, what do you want to talk about?
Hi there, Lynn.
Hi.
I would love to learn about a custom cocktail. My fiance and I are getting married, and we would really love to do a signature cocktail at our cocktail hour to treat our guests and kind of show them a bit of our personalities.
Right.
So I'm looking for some ideas from you.
What are your backgrounds?
He's Jamaican, and I'm Swedish. So there's a really neat cultural mix there.
You know what comes to mind? Hibiscus flower tea. I mean, hibiscus flower. You know, you can find this all over the place. They're herb teas. And they taste, they're really the dried hibiscus. And I was having hibiscus fruit drinks. You know, they were treated as a fruit in Mexico, where they're tart, and they're beautiful color of red to pink, gorgeous.
Wow! And if you
wouldn't that be interesting with a couple of shots of aqua vie in tall glasses with ice? Because if this is your wedding cocktail, you don't want people stunned, you know, into complete inebriation, you know, after two glasses. So you could water this down really nicely, but you do the hibiscus. You could use a little ginger ale with it, or just a bit of sugar that you muddle, all right, with lime, so you get even more tart, nice, yet sweet tart. And the alcohol could be aquavit.
That sounds delicious.
I think it could really be a hoot. And if you want to have some fun, you could buy a reasonably priced aquavit, and you could add a little bit of the hibiscus tea to it. Just let it sit, and so you'll be like hibiscus on hibiscus. Or you could add lime to it, you know, because you can flavor aquavit.
Right.
Or you could add, fresh ginger.
Oh, Ian would love that. That's his favorite.
That would be fabulous, because that would be, I'm thinking of the wonderful Jamaican ginger ales that are like nothing on earth. There's your drink. It's going to be a ginger hibiscus tall drink. We can call it a cooler.
A cooler.
Okay, so it would be Kimberly Ian Cooler.
Fabulous.
And it has a little feeling of the islands, and it has definitely a part of your background.
Oh, that has so much flair. That's perfect.
Well, just, you know what? Raise a glass to us at the Splendid Table.
We certainly will.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
And congratulations to both of you. Much happiness.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Now that I think about it, that sounds so good. I'm going to make one this weekend. 800-537-5252. We have got Jessica calling from Lexington, Kentucky. Jessica, what do you want to talk about?
Hi, Lynn. It's really great to talk to you. I have this dilemma. I have a boyfriend who thinks he is such hot stuff in the kitchen and always takes over when we cook. And I just need some advice to make a dish that will knock his culinary socks off and just take him down a few pegs. I I need this. He's still talking about the ceviche that he cooked about 3 months ago.
Yeah, this is the other side of, isn't it wonderful to have a man that cooks? Yeah, except
it is wonderful,
it's
yes.
It's like the Frankenstein version of that. I understand. Well, I have to tell you, the first thing that occurs to me is I think both of you should enter our gastrosexual contest.
Yes, I heard that last week, and I thought, bingo.
Oh,
mentioned seduction.
Now, remember, you can't nominate someone. You only can enter yourself. So he could be on his own. Wouldn't it be a hoot if you were chosen as the gastrosexual of the month?
I think he would be proud and willing.
Oh, he would? Oh, that's what. Okay, well, now, let's go back, though, to the immediate need. What is he like?
We cook with a lot of organic vegetables, fruits, fresh,
okay.
Shrimp, fish.
Does he like spice? Does he tend to lean toward complicated things or very simple things?
Simple, but with an air of complicated.
I understand. We call this...
Looks more complicated than it is.
Yes, but it has a certain flair, you know, like
yes,
a little vanilla.
Style.
A little vanilla in that butter that goes over the shrimp kind
mm-hmm.
of thing. Come to think
mm-hmm.
of it, we may have the beginning of an idea there. Now, what do you like to cook?
Myself, because I am a poor college student, I'm very limited. And plus, I have the dullest knives you can imagine. So it's mm-hmm. a lot of instant and salad.
I understand. Okay.
Cheese.
All right. Here's the deal. Now, you're in Lexington, right?
Yes.
I would imagine the markets are starting up, the farmers markets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is what you could do. I'm just making this up as I go along, but it makes a lot of sense. If he loves fish, mm-hmm. invest in some really nice shrimp. Okay. And what you're going to do is go to the farmer's market and pick up what really looks great now. And it's going to probably be a combination of greens like chard and maybe some kale, maybe some tart salad greens. Probably they're good. I don't know if it's carrot season yet, but here's what I
don't know.
Yeah. Okay. But this is what I'm thinking. You're going to do shrimp with vanilla and chili.
Ooh, yeah.
And this is going to be so easy, it's going to be ludicrous. All right? And
like,
you are going to do with that, you're going to do a beautiful salad of new greens. You'll dress that lightly with oil and fresh lemon. Okay? And then you will take carrots or whatever other vegetable you find, and you will slow braise that in a small amount of olive oil. All right? With some dried apricots and white wine.
Oh, yeah. That sounds...
Doesn't that sound yummy? So
oh,
you got
yeah.
the tart greens, the sweet carrots, and now mm-hmm. what you're going to do is you're going to get as big shrimp as you can afford. You're going to shell them, but just leave that last section of the shell of the tail intact, okay? And you're going to cook them really gently. You're going to melt some butter in a pan. You're going to add a split vanilla bean, all right? And you're going to add a couple of pinches of hot pepper and salt and black pepper. And you're going to cook the shrimp. I call it slow rolling, where you just cook it over low heat very slowly, turning them occasionally. You'll do this the last minute. Everything else, the carrots can be made ahead and reheated. The salad can be cleaned and dried and be ready to be dressed. Everything is right there. All right? Now, with the shrimp, you're going to cook them slowly. It may take up to 5 minutes or so until they're pink and they're firm but not rubbery.
And this should be on the lowest heat possible?
Medium low. Okay? And then what you're going to do is put the shrimp aside for just a moment. You can do the plates, you know, plate everything so that you've got the pile of salad, you've got the carrots, and then you're going to spoon that shrimp with its pan sauce onto the plate. You could spread a little of the sauce.
Lovely.
It is very, very, very simple, but I think it's going to have him plots.
Oh, yes.
A favorite New York expression. But he's going to plots. And he will be kissing the hem of your apron, girl.
I cannot wait.
And enter the gastrosexual contest. It could be a hoot.
Self-nominated.
Of course. Who else, right? Jessica, thank you, and good luck.
Thank you, Lynn.
Okay. Bye. Call us, 800-537-5252.
For all the profound and provocative sides of Nikki Giovanni's poetry, I hear her voice and I smile. I mean, there's such joy to this woman. Nikki has been publishing work since the 1970s, in the days of the Black Power movement. She's now professor of English and the Gloria D. Smith Professor of Black Studies at Virginia Tech. Nikki Giovanni, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, Nikki, you're a teacher, and you teach people to write poetry. And this may seem like an overly simple question, but how do you get your students' minds there?
You know, I think writing poetry is not what you teach, but what you let people do. And so many people discourage people's imaginations. And they'll say, you can't write a poem like that, or a poem has to do this. It has to rhyme, or it has to have this meter, or it has to do. And actually, a poem is. And once you free your students, it's amazing how much wonderful work you get.
Where do you send them for inspiration?
Well, we do everything. I'm a big fan of food, and actually we do cooking events all the time. We make stone soup. Remember that old stone soup?
Yeah.
My class and I made stone soup because so many of the kids now don't have a grounding in children's literature. And so we've been doing a lot with children's literature, which is actually folk literature, and all of that, not all of it, but 99% of it is going to reside in food. And so I thought, well, we should cook something together. So we did this stone soup. It was really funny. My student, Will, and I'll never let him live it down, was the only one who came, and he bought, he said, Nikki, I bought the noodles, which they weren't. It was spaghetti. I said, Will, first of all, it's not noodles, it's spaghetti. But secondly, it's not done, because everybody had to bring it done. He said, oh, can't you just throw it in? And no, you can't. So we decided Will needs a girlfriend. But we all bought one cup of something and put it in. It was more fun.
And then what came out of that in terms of poetry?
Well, I don't know. What came out of it in terms of community was, and this was important, I think, in terms of how we think, in terms of community, people realize, oh, if everybody does a little bit, something better happens.
Yeah.
And that was more, I wanted to more change their minds than them to actually write a poem. I wanted them to see, first of all, a stew is a poem, because poetry is dissimilar things coming together to make a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
And we're also dealing with community, because we as a community are better, or should be, than we are individually. If each of us shares what we have, something better will come out of it. So life is about our particular talents and how our talents match up with and complement other talents.
Could you read something for us?
Oh, may I read So Enchanted With You?
Sure.
Can I read a love poem? Because
yes.
I love a love poem. It makes you smile.
Which, as I said, you always do for me.
Well, thank you. I like boiled turnips, boiled potatoes, boiled rutabagas with butter and sea salt, but not every day. I like fried Virginia flounder, fried sand dabs, fried smelts, but usually only on Friday nights. I want drop biscuits, miniature Parker House rolls, extra thin white bread when I uncharacteristically make sandwich. I like garlic straight off the vine, anchovies anytime, and good red wines because I'm too old to drink cheap. I like to pound and grill my veal. I rub my beef in a special chili mixture. I really don't eat anyone else's ground meat. In other words, I'm normal. So this is the question. Why am I so enchanted with you? I love that.
I do, too.
I mean, there's nothing sillier on earth than falling in love.
It's true. And all the things that you imbue that person with, fried flounder.
All the good things in life.
Yeah, exactly. Nikki, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I enjoy it.
Poet Nikki Giovanni was reading her poem, So Enchanted With You, from her book Bicycles, Love Poems. Now, for more information on the Poetry Radio Project, go to the website, splendidtable.org. Well, that's the show for this week. Thanks for joining us. And remember, you can call us anytime. The number is 800-537-5252. And until next week, let me leave you with this thought from an anonymous soul who said, forget love. I'd rather fall in chocolate. The Splendid Table is produced by American Public Media, presenting The Next American Dream, What Will It Look Like? Find more information at nextamericandream.org. Now, you'll find information on almost everything you've heard here today on our website, splendidtable.org, and there's so much more. Not only will you find newsletters and podcasts, you'll find information on our book, How to Eat Supper, and you'll find a selection of inexpensive recipes to get you cooking in your kitchen. Also at splendidtable.org is the Splendid Table store, where you can find products related to cooking and baking. Our show is produced by Jennifer Russell with help from Andrew Schumacher and Judy Boudreau. Our technical director is Jennifer Lubke. Our website is managed by Judy Graham and Brett Baldwin. Our managing producer is Sally Swift. Well, we'll be back next week. You have a good one, and thanks for tuning in. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper.
American Public Media.